So 3 weeks ago, we started a series on calling, and we started it off with looking into the fact that everyone of us have been called by God. If you consider yourself to be a follower of Jesus, you have received a call already from God. You don't need to wait around for God to call you. So we read, I have called you by your name, you are mine. We have been called by God to be fully you for Him. Wherever you find yourself, whatever time of life you find yourself, whatever space you find yourself in, you have been called to be you for God. So we cannot get away with the excuse of, I haven't received the call yet. We have. The second week, we looked into that very frequent occurrence of people feeling insignificant after God has called us. Feeling that we are not good enough and not important enough to serve God in a certain way. So then we explored David's story of how even his own dad didn't think that he would cut it. But God looked at something different, and God called him to be the king of his people. God looks at us differently than the world would do. Last week, we got into the phases of a call from God, how it usually worked in the Bible, and how it often works in our lives, to see if we can identify where we get stuck. At the calling moment, there's always a moment of the call, and we know we've got that, so we cannot get stuck there. We've already been called. We look into the fear, which is also answered with the reassurance by God. I will be with you. I will go with you every step of the way. Then we got to the decision part. We didn't speak a lot about that last week. I said we'll speak about that today. And then there's life change. Regardless of what the decision was, if it was no, there would also be life change. Your heart would start to harden, and you would start to not hear God as clearly. And every time you would reject the call from God, it would just spiral downward from there. If you answer the call from God, if you accept it, there's spiritual growth. There's a depth to your faith that starts to develop. So today I want to move on to the last message of the series, which is speaking more towards the fourth phase, the decision phase, and revisit the day when God got pretty angry. Now the Bible describes it as the day when the Lord's anger burned. That sounds scary just in itself, without any special sound effects from Jaws. It just sounds scary all by itself. The day the Lord's anger burned. Maybe we never see a day like that. It sounds scary. But there was a day like that. So, excuse that. That's a shortened version for Afrikaans Exodus. So, I still need to sometimes remember not to do it without which BEX. We're going to turn to our scripture readings a bit later on, which is going to be coming from Exodus 3 verses 7 to 10, 13 to 15, and then chapter 4 verses 1 to 14. And we are going to cover some of the pieces we read last week, and we are going to read some of the pieces we omitted last week. But we'll get to that in a bit. Before we get to the part of Moses being called by God, we just need to familiarize ourselves with some of the events prior to Moses' call, earlier on in his life. So we will quickly recap some of his background details and look at a bit of geography of the time and in this process, and see if we can refresh our memory about Moses' life prior to God's call. So I've got some scripture here. I'm just going to take out the most important parts. This comes from Exodus 2, verses 1 to 10, and then later on we'll kick off from 3. Now this is just the background story of Moses. How Moses' mother put him in a basket. She put him in the Nile, because at the time the Hebrew kids were killed off by edict of the Pharaoh. And then the Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to take a bath. She saw the baby, or she heard the baby cry, and or she saw him, and then he started crying. She saw Moses' sister standing nearby. She was making sure he is safe. And then she approached the daughter of the Pharaoh, saying, "I know a wet nurse that can look after him until he can come back to you." So then she said, "Okay, go and get her." And Moses ended up with his own mother. So his own mother nursed him until a certain age, and then they took him back to the Pharaoh's daughter. Verse 10, Exodus 2, verse 10, when the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." So we know that essentially Moses was an Egyptian prince from that day on. He was not going to be the next Pharaoh, but he was royalty. He was considered to be royalty. He grew up in the same palace as the future king, the future Pharaoh. He knew exactly what was expected in the royal court, and he knew when it was expected. So he knew how to address fellow royalty. He knew when to bow and when to expect others to bow to him. So he didn't just study palace protocols of the time. He actually lived the palace protocols of the time. And that is how we are introduced to Moses, the Hebrew boy that became an adopted Egyptian prince. I do something wrong. But then he sees the way that the people of God are treated as slaves, how they are beaten. And it only started out as him feeling sorry for them, but in time he identifies with them, with the Hebrew people that were the slaves of the Egyptians. It became his people in his mind. Now, I really don't know why he identified with them as his people. I don't know if someone reminded him constantly that he wasn't really Egyptian royalty. Maybe it was an adopted sibling that would constantly tell him that he was not one of them. Maybe it was one of the slaves that started speaking out, reminding him that he was actually one of them. Maybe it was a positive encounter. One of the Hebrew slaves, an old man, who would talk to Moses and teach him about the Hebrew God. And in this way, he started to identify with him. I don't know. But the Bible does tell us that Moses knew they were his own people. That's all it tells us. Moses knew that they were his own people. So, then Moses saw an Egyptian beating a slave, and he just lost it. He just flipped. So Moses started beating that same Egyptian, and he killed him. And we know that because of this, Moses had to flee for his life. So he flew into the desert. And sometime during his flight through the desert, he got to a place called Midian. And stopping at a well for a drink of water, Moses saw how seven young women got bullied by a group of men as they tried to draw water for the sheep they were tending. And Moses wasn't having any of this, so he stepped up to protect them, and he watered their flock. So it turned out that their father was a priest in the area, and he was extremely grateful, so he took Moses in, and he offered one of his daughters in marriage. So at this point, we're going to jump back to scripture for a few verses. So Exodus 3 verses 1 to 2. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. So he was looking after those same sheep later on. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. And this is where God called Moses, at this place, at the burning bush. Now, Mount Horeb and Mount Sinai is the exact same place. Even in Exodus, you'll find both of these two references. It's the same place. It's the mountain of God, the mountain of the Lord, they would also call it. But Mount Horeb, Mount Sinai, is the exact same place. And this is where he received his call. Now, just a quick geography lesson. Moses started, when he fled Egypt, he started in Egypt, and he went, that is the most direct line that he could have taken to Midian. So he went to Midian. So he fled through that desert, went past Kadesh Barnea, the area of Kadesh Barnea, if you take a straight line there, that's the last place where the people of God put up camp before they went into the promised land. That's also the place, 2 years into the Exodus journey, where the 10 spies were sent from. When 12 spies, where 10 came back and said, no, we shouldn't go into said, yes, we should. And then they wanted another 38 years in that desert. So, and there's the Mount Sinai where God called him. So he went past that area, went to Midian, and started tending his father-in-law's sheep. And then we picked it up in Exodus 3 at Mount Sinai, where God called him. Now, I'll say something about that geography lesson in a bit. So, with all things said and mentioned in Exodus 2 and 3, you just couldn't find any person more suitable for the task Moses has been called for than the man himself. I mean, look at this. Just start off with the palace protocol. He knows the palace protocol in the Pharaoh's court to the T. He knows what to say. He knows what to do. He knows how to make the correct impressions. He knows how to push the royals' buttons to get them to do something. He know it all because he grew up in that place. He was an insider for many years. No one except other pharaohs or princes or princesses growing up in that palace would have the same knowledge. So he's extremely familiar with palace protocol. He knows what it means to leave everything behind and just go. He had to do it before himself. He also had to leave Egypt in a rush, taking only with him what he can carry. So when the time comes when he would expect the people of God to just pack up and leave, he will understand the emotions they would feel at the time. Actually, Moses had to do it twice. He had to leave Egypt 40 years ago. And now when God calls him at the burning bush, he had to do it again. And we read that he just packed a donkey, left the rest behind Midian, and set off. He knows what it means to leave a whole life behind and just go. And he knows what it's like to leave Egypt behind and just go. Moses spent 40 years in the same desert he was going to lead God's people into. This is where he lived, in the desert, the same desert the Israelites would wander in. And here's the kicker. He did it for 40 years. Because 40 years since he left Egypt, he went back. So he lived in that same desert for 40 years. Moses knows what 40 years in a desert feels like. He knows what 40 years in that desert feels like. He knows what it means to have sand in your sleeping mat every night for 40 years. And he knows what mental capacity it would take to survive 40 years in a desert. And in that desert. Which also means he knows the whole area pretty well. After living somewhere for 40 years, you do get to know the area well. He knows the weather. He knows that if the wind blows from this side, you'd better make sure your tent is secured because there's a sandstorm on the way. But if the wind blows from this side, it means it will be a cool night. So you'd better get your blankets rolled out. He'd know where the good hiding spots are. Should they be attacked by other people? After 40 years in one place, you know quite a bit of that place. And he knows how to keep flock alive in those conditions. That's what he did the last 40 years in this area. He looked after his father-in-law's sheep. He understood how to care for a flock in these harsh conditions. When to move to the next pasture. He knows just by looking at the amount of grass after some torrential rains, how long they will be able to graze there before it's time to move on. The Israelites don't know any of this yet. But Moses will be able to teach them. He will help them keep their animals alive in those conditions for 40 years. He did it before. Moses also had his own problems of faith. He found it hard to trust God himself. He was one of those people that needed signs, that needed physical signs to facilitate his faith. He asked God for signs, for extraordinary signs, because his faith wasn't strong enough. He wanted to see. This is the same thing the Israelites did in the Exodus. They constantly had to see before they believed. And Moses can resonate with this. He was the same. And this will be part of our scripture reading today. Moses asking God for signs to facilitate his faith. So we'll get into it. Exodus 3 verses 7 to 10. 30 to 15, and then 4, 1 to 14. The Lord said, I've indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. The home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to the Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. Then chapter 4 verse 1. So Moses answered, what if they do not believe me? Or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you. Then the Lord said to him, what is that in your hand? A staff, he replied. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and he turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you. Then the Lord said, put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become as white as snow. Now put it back into your cloak, he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile and pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to me, to your servant. I'm slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who make them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or make them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send somebody else. Now, if I don't read the next verse, with everything said up till now, this can be a very nice inspirational sermon about how God prepares his people. Because he does. And he did with Moses. And we saw all of that. How God prepared him to accept the call. To serve in this way. I mean, he's the best guy for the job. So it can be a nice inspirational sermon. But then there's another verse to it. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, what about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses. That's a terrible phrase right there. It's not, and the Lord got angry. It's a descriptive anger. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses. You see, the problem was, Moses was looking for excuses not to accept God's call. He didn't want to do it. He was afraid. And we looked at his fear when we spoke about the phases and then God's reassurance. And God counted every excuse with reassurance. He gave physical signs, but Moses wouldn't budge. And then God got angry. So angry that it's written that his anger burned. That is not your everyday anger. A few verses on in verse 24, we read that God was about to kill Moses. The Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. Exodus 4 verses 24. God's anger really did burn against Moses. Because Moses was just the man for this job. God has prepared him for this his whole life. It took years. It took 80 years to prepare him for this. Because it's not just the 40 years in the desert. He had to learn the palace protocol, so he had to get into the palace, which was the start. It took years to prepare him for this. And now God called him into service, and Moses said no. So God got angry, because Moses wouldn't accept God's. And God called him. The calling moment, that was fine. God called him. The bush was burning. It was so clear. God spoke to his fears by reassuring him time and time and again. But when it came to the decision part, whether or not to accept God's call, he opted for a big fat no. Not for me. Not today. Thank you. And God, the God who is slow to anger and compassionate and merciful, according to Psalm 103. The God who is slow to anger, but extremely angry, because Moses wouldn't accept God's call. So it got be wondering if God sometimes gets angry at us for the same reason. Leading us on a journey. Calling us. Giving us a great mix of talents and personality and background and opportunity. Then he sets off on a journey with us, holding on to us through bad times, teaching us, molding us. And I hear the echo of Romans 8:28. The God who makes everything work for the good of his people. And then he calls us. And then sometimes people say no. Makes me wonder if God sometimes gets angry in this way at us as well. And this is not meant to be a fire and brimstone sermon about hell and eternal damnation. Because we know that Moses was a friend of God. There was no prophet like him ever again. This is the extreme anger of someone getting hurt by a loved one. And that's normally the most extreme anger. So it's not about fire and brimstone. It's about God getting hurt when he prepares us and then he calls us and people say no. We spent 4 weeks looking at God calling us to serve. Firstly, we know that we know that we know that we have all been called. We have been called to be us for Jesus. I've been called to be Carl for Jesus. He's been called to be Bill for Jesus. We've established that. We cannot get away from that. You cannot escape it. If you are following Jesus, you have been called. And we know that God doesn't let himself be dictated how to choose people, how to call people. Because God doesn't subscribe to the criteria of our society. When God calls people, he doesn't think of anyone as too insignificant. And we've learned that there's usually a process and phases of progression when people are called by God. And should we get stuck somewhere in the call process, we know how to get unstuck. So that's all nice. The three sermons, that's all nice to know and to feel comfortable with it. Yes, we get the opportunity to serve. Excuse me. But then in those phases, there's a decision to be made. Will you surrender to God? Will you accept his call to be fully you, all for him? Or would you rather take a chance of his anger burning again?